Measure Up Podcast, Episode 17, The Right Measurement Mindset. G'day and welcome. I'm Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist of StaceyBarr.com and your host for the Measure Up podcast. My passion is making it easy and fun for you to meaningfully measure the performance of your organization or business so it can be truly excellent at what it exists to do. In this episode of the Measure Up podcast about the right measurement mindset, our feature article is My Measurement Success Mantras. We'll help Measure Up subscriber Jeff answer his question about how do you get people to adopt a KPI mindset, and we'll wrap up with a quick tip about as-is versus should-be performance measurement. I love the theme of this episode of the podcast. Having the right mindset is absolutely one of the precursors to being excellent at anything. Anything, I guess, other than being excellent at not being excellent. TheFreeDictionary.com defines a mindset as a fixed mental attitude or disposition that predetermines a person's responses to and interpretations of situations. I think it's very much born of this idea that what you think about is what you get. What you think about influences what you notice about the world around you, but it also influences what decisions you end up making as well. You can think, no doubt, of lots of examples in your own life of how your thoughts have directed your experiences. When I just think about how much I have to do and how busy my schedule is and all the things that I've got to make time for, I instantly start feeling more tired and just look at the couch in my office where my little dog Inda is currently curled up, staring at me, wondering who I'm talking to, I guess. I look at that couch and think I'd just like to curl up there with her and have a little nap. But if I just immediately shift my mindset and start thinking about how well everything's going, how I'm being quite productive and how the workshops that I'm running are filling up and, you know, the people are having fun at them and they're getting easier for me to deliver, and thinking about how well my running's going and just, you know, the amount of balance that I'm starting to get in my life now, I suddenly feel more energized instantly. So to me, I don't need any convincing of this idea that what you think about certainly determines the experience that you have. But it's hard to get the right thoughts in your head, I guess, so that you do support the goals that you're trying to pursue. There's a bunch of skills that we really need to practice to have the right kind of mindset, to be in control of having the right kind of mindset. I guess one of those skills has got to be goal setting, doesn't it? You've got to know what you want. There's no point developing a mindset when you have absolutely no idea what you want it to achieve for you. So having clear goals is definitely a prerequisite. Visioning skills are also really important as well. Just to write down a goal like I want more time, or I want a better balanced lifestyle, or I want to be a performance measurement guru, that's really only step one in goal setting. The visioning that helps you create in your mind, in your mind's eye, a really rich description or sense of what achieving that goal will feel like, that really takes it to the next level. And the more vivid you can be in your mind's eye of the goals that you have, the easier it is for you to connect to that goal, to understand why you're pursuing it and what it feels like to pursue it, but also to understand what kind of mental attitude is going to help you get there. Self-awareness, I reckon, is another really important skill too. If you want to, you know, be in control of your own mindset, it's the self-awareness to recognize when you don't have a constructive mindset, when you might be thinking negatively or being distracted or basically not thinking about the kinds of things that are really going to be supportive of achieving your goals. Plus, it's the self-awareness of knowing where your strengths and weaknesses are so that you can design the right kind of mindset that supports you. Another skill that I reckon is really important to practice is persistence, because being good at controlling your own mindset and holding the right kinds of thoughts in your mind, having that right mental attitude, isn't easy and it doesn't come naturally, and it really takes persistence to keep practicing it. There are lots of things you can do to practice the skills of having a good mindset: goal setting, visioning, self-awareness, persistence, etc. And it's through rituals and routines. That's generally the approach that you take when you want to systematize anything, and systematizing things does make things easier. One of the rituals that I was using for quite some time, and now that I'm telling you about it, it's a reminder for me to go back and use it because I really loved it. It's called 10-Minute Toughness, and it's a little thinking process that was developed by Jason Selk. If you googled Jason Selk, S-E-L-K, and 10-Minute Toughness, I'm pretty sure you'd find information about his book and about his website. He's pretty good at promoting his stuff. The 10-Minute Toughness program is a thought process that focuses you on your goal. It gets you really clearly understanding what your goal's about, what it feels like to achieve that goal, but also what it will take to reach that goal. And it keeps your mind very, very focused on those things. It's called 10MT for short. And I can't remember how often he says to practice it, but I found that if I tried to go through it in my mind before I went to bed at night, and then again when I woke up in the morning for a particular goal that might be my priority goal of the moment, then it worked quite well. Mantras are a simpler way of practicing those skills of a fixed mental attitude, and mantras are just three or four or five word phrases that sum up a belief or an attitude, and you tend to recite mantras over and over again. But they're powerful. I mean, if you choose the right kind of mantras for you and for your goal, then they are a great way of habitualizing a certain way of thinking. Sensory-rich visioning is another tool that's quite powerful as well, because what I mean by sensory rich is describing your goal and the achievement of your goal in language that captures and engages all of your senses. What you'd see if you were achieving that goal, what you'd feel, what you'd hear, what you'd taste, what you'd smell, you know, all that kind of really rich sensory descriptive language. When it comes down to it, our mindsets are entirely up to us. We are in control of what we think. It's probably one of the only things we are in complete control of. We're in control of noticing when we're thinking negatively and when we're thinking constructively. We're in control of what we do to formalize the habit of thinking constructively and thinking about the right things. It's important that we learn how to manage our mindset and not give up when it gets hard or when we keep making mistakes. I mean, that's fine. Negative thinking is going to pop in all the time, I guess, but it's about experimenting and finding different rituals and routines and ways of systemizing a strong, powerful, constructive mindset that works for you. So we shape our mindsets simply by what we choose to think about. And an easy way to think about the right things, like I mentioned before, is to make mantras out of them. Simple one-line statements that sum up a belief or an attitude that helps us. Mantras work in all kinds of situations, and as you're probably about to realize, I also believe that mantras work very, very well for performance measurement. You know, it's something that we often struggle with. We have goals around doing performance measurement better, so why not have mantras that help us improve the way we measure performance? And that's what we'll cover in this episode's feature article, My Measurement Success Mantras. You can get the written copy of the podcast's feature article in this episode's corresponding issue of the Measure Up email newsletter. The newsletter gives you additional resources to meaningfully measure what matters, and you can subscribe for free at measureupblog.com. I love mantras. I love how they can carry a paragraph full of meaning in just a few words, and because of this, be fabulous reminders of what matters. I have mantras for running, light and quick, here and now, and mantras for dealing with setbacks, onwards and upwards, and yes, you guessed it, mantras for measurement. Here you go. I'm going to share some of them with you. Mantra number one, success loves speed. I didn't make this one up, but I can't remember where it came from. It means that the faster you move, the faster you fail. The faster you fail, the faster you learn. And the faster you learn, the faster you succeed. Don't waste time over planning. Do more action learning. Mantra number two is patterns, not points. Often I'll add a second part to this one. Signals, not noise. It's about our obsession with comparing this month's performance to last month or the same month last year. How do you know last month or the same month last year were normal? 2 points of data do not contain any signals about whether something has changed. We need to look for patterns in our performance measures time series because that's where we'll find the true signals. Mantra number three, it's a process, not an event. Performance measurement is not a brainstorming session squeezed into the last day of the annual planning workshop. Treating it as an event like this causes most of the problems we have with measurement. No, performance measurement is a process, a series of steps that involve selecting meaningful measures, bringing them to life usefully, and then using them to guide decisions about performance improvement. Mantra number four is buy-in, not sign-off. Buy-in is when someone has taken their hand to help creating something. When you do that, you invest some of yourself in that thing. It's the same for performance measures. When people create them, they feel a stronger sense of owning them. That's the way to get people engaged in bringing measures to life and using them to improve performance. Sign-off does not even come close. Mantra number five, results before measures. So what should our measures be? Wrong question. The right question is, so what results are important for us to achieve? Then you should ask, how will we recognize those results happening? And thusly, what are some sensible ways to measure those results? Measure design is a deliberate procedure, not a creative brainstorming session. Mantra number six, should, can, and will. How many measures should you have? I don't know, but I do know that the only results worth measuring are those that you should, can, and will do something about. If it's not an important performance result, then you shouldn't do anything about it. If it's a result outside your circle of influence, then you can't do anything about it. If you just don't feel the passion for it or haven't got the time for it, then you won't do anything about it. I'm going to come back with mantra number seven in just a sec. My dog wants to go outside. Hang on. Well, I'm back. I probably didn't need to tell you that because with editing software, I could have edited it all out. But where's the fun in that? Mantra number seven, practical, not perfect. One of the biggest delays in the flow of the performance measurement process is procrastination. We procrastinate on choosing measures because our goals aren't yet clear enough. We procrastinate on performance reporting because our measures aren't spot on yet. We procrastinate on performance improvement because the measures aren't complete enough or accurate enough. Some information is better than no information, and success loves speed. If you want to take action on any of the ideas in this feature article, here's a suggestion. Does one of these mantras stand out for you or for your organization? Perhaps you could walk around the office or sit in meetings reciting it out loud over and over again until someone asks you what on earth you're doing or have you gone mad? It might turn out to be a usefully different way to start a conversation worth having. And it's not a bad strategy in relation to this episode's question from MeasureUp subscriber Jeff. Jeff asks, how do I get people in the organization on board with the KPI mindset to really improve performance? Well, suggestion number one, Jeff, is do it slowly, not overnight. Don't expect an overnight result. Now, success loves speed, but some things just need a little bit more time to happen, and changing a mindset does take some practice, particularly when you're instigating it and not the people themselves. You also want to adopt several strategies, I reckon, to help people's mindsets about KPIs change. Don't look for the one-hit wonder. It's going to be something that you'll need to attack from several angles. One of the angles would be to start with what their objections are to measurement, because the objections people have about not wanting to be involved in measurement are really good clues about what their underlying beliefs about KPIs are. And usually their underlying beliefs have formed from past experiences where KPIs have been done badly, rather than being the result of just, you know, performance measurement in and of itself. So, for example, a really common objection to measurement is, we tried measuring performance before and it didn't work. We've done KPIs and it didn't work. Well, the underlying belief, or one of the underlying beliefs for that objection, is possibly that people are seeing measurement itself as the problem, and they're not seeing that the way they went about doing measurement was the problem. So a good response in that situation, or to that objection — I've got a mosquito buzzing around my head here and it's already bitten me a few times. Oh, gee. A good response — I'm being a little bit casual this time around with this podcast. I hope you don't mind. I tried to record it once already and realized I hadn't pressed the record button, so I'm kind of a little bit over it, and I'm just taking an easier, laid-back approach to this recording. The response — let me get back on track, hey? The response is that when measurement works, you get performance improvement, you get to achieve your goals sooner and faster, and you get to solve problems for real. And when people can understand that that's what it means when measurement works, then it's easier for them to see that if it's not working for us, it's not because there's a problem with measurement, it's because of the way we're going about doing it. So when you get past people's objections — and I mean, that's only one objection, you'd want to figure out what objections your people are having, Jeff, to performance measurement and following a similar kind of logic. But once you get past those objections and you at least get them interested or curious in trying a different approach to performance measurement, your next step is to get some quick wins. And your reason for doing that is to give them some fast and early experiences of KPIs done well, and that will start building the groundswell. So, for example, to get a quick win, you want to make sure you have a very simple focus, just one goal or performance problem. You don't want to try to measure too many things at once. Step two, you want to make sure that the something that you're going to focus KPIs on has a WIFM, a W-I-F-M, the what's in it for me, for those people. And that's about picking a goal that they'd really care about achieving. It might be, I don't know, reducing unpaid overtime if they happen to be working long hours and not spending time with their families, or getting home in time for dinner, or having time to truly relax and unwind on the weekends. You want to make sure that when you set up KPIs for monitoring that, that it's all about improving the situation, not about blaming someone and not about holding anyone to account. It's just about improving, solving the problem. And that's one of the main purposes of doing these quick wins, is to demonstrate that measurement is about improving things faster. You'll solve those problems and achieve those goals much quicker when you measure them properly and let the measurement guide your decisions than if you don't measure them at all. So, Jeff, I hope that was useful and helpful in some way. And for everyone else, if you have a question that you'd like me to answer for you on this podcast, just shoot me an email at measureup@stacybarr.com. Like I mentioned, that really is a typical objection, you know, that people don't value measurement because it's never worked in the past. If you agree with the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, then it should be obvious that the reason measurement hasn't worked in the past is because of the approach that you've been taking. And that's to do with the design of your performance measurement process, which is the topic of this episode's quick tip: as is versus should be performance measurement. I'm going to share with you 5 steps to review your performance measurement process so that it can better serve you and overcome those objections people have to measurement. Step one is flowchart how it happens now. Just draw a diagram that shows step by step how you currently do performance measurement. Be honest. This is called your as-is process. Step two is to identify in that process all the problems. Where is it ad hoc? Where are you not taking a deliberate approach? Where is time being wasted? Where are delays happening? Where is it hard? Where are you struggling? Where does the buy-in get eroded? All those kinds of problems that happen in your as-is process, and those problems are called disconnects. Step three is to learn about what a good performance measurement process looks like and use that information that you gather to remodel yours. Now, for example, the pump performance measure blueprint is a model of a performance measurement process, and it's deliberate. It has specific steps with specific goals at each step. Like, for example, one of the first steps is to make your strategy measurable. And the idea of that is to make sure that you've got goals written in a way that are clear and unambiguous and easy to design measures for. Step two is to design the measures. And there's a five-step deliberate measure design process. No brainstorming allowed. There are a lot of other steps in the pump blueprint, but I won't go into them here and now. But the idea is go and find out what good measurement looks like. Then step four is to flowchart your performance measurement process as it should be, as you want it to be, the way you'd like it to be. And that's called your should be process. And it should embed a lot of those great ideas that you learned about what good measurement's about and remove the disconnects that you identified at step two. Then step five is start making the changes happening. Start fixing your measurement process. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 17. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for putting up with my little distractions along the way. You can download these podcasts and also read the feature articles at measureupblog.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast at iTunes. Just search for Measure Up. And when you do, please leave a comment. Give a rating to the podcast and leave a comment that can help other people decide whether it's the kind of podcast they want to sign up to. It'll also help me understand how much you're enjoying it and what you're getting out of it. Well, until next time, this is Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist, signing off. Keep measuring what matters and engaging everyone you can to do the same.